Good morning. It is time to get up with enormous news. A comprehensive plan for baseball to return much sooner than we expected. All the details right off the top. Then, the NBA commissioner offers his thoughts on return and what he knows now that he didn't when he had to suspend his season. You'll hear from Adam Silver. And then football. What the Dolphins want you to believe that is absolutely not true about the fifth pick in the draft. All that and more as we get up with you, starting right now. It's Wednesday. I'm Mike Greenberg. We're in Bristol. And again, we thank you for getting up with us as sports fans as we get through all of this together. And most importantly, to those who are medical professionals and first responders, our show is for you. And we thank you for everything you are doing to keep the rest of us safe and healthy. And we start with Get Up and Go because it's a day filled with really big news. The NBA's commissioner, Adam Silver, in an interview last night, said he doesn't expect to make any decisions on his season until May at the earliest. There's a lot to get to there, and we will with Woj in the middle of this hour. Elsewhere, Dana White, UFC, announcing that Tony Ferguson and Justin Gaethje will be the new main event for UFC 249. That's April 18th at a still undisclosed location. He also told our Brett Okamoto that he has secured a private island to host future cards after that, to see what that looks like. Elsewhere, golf announcing a revamped schedule for 2020 in light of the official cancellation of the Open Championship. Headlining the new tour calendar is the Masters, now being scheduled for November 12th through the 15th. So hold my calls that weekend. Other dates the PGA Tour announced yesterday, the PGA Championship will stay in San Francisco but move to August. The U.S. Open will stay in the New York City area at Wingfoot but move to September, the week before the Ryder Cup, which is held in Wisconsin. If all of this is possible, it will be a very busy golf calendar this summer and fall. And then our big story, Major League Baseball working on a plan to return as early as May, with all 30 teams playing at stadiums without fans in the greater Phoenix area. Players, coaches, and essential personnel would essentially be sequestered at local hotels and live in relative isolation in order to make all of this work. The man whose story this is, late last night on ESPN.com, is that man, Jeff Passan, our baseball insider. It's an extraordinarily detailed story. Jeff, for those who are waking up and haven't read it yet, what are the most important points here that we need to know as they try to work towards the beginning of a baseball season?
I think the most important point, Greeny, is that right now this is a plan, and it is a plan that is going to be extraordinarily difficult to pull off because of all of the logistics, because of getting everybody on board with it, because it requires so many things going right in order for it to happen. And those typically are not the sorts of plans and plots that you see, say, in heist movies or something along those lines. You don't see those applied to sports leagues trying to come back. But here we are. They recognize at Major League Baseball and among the player population that if this plan doesn't work, the likelihood of baseball coming back in 2020 is far less. And so what they're doing is laying things out right now to essentially put themselves inside of a biosphere in the Phoenix area, which would keep them away from the public and ensure that any health problems do not spread there. And hopefully once they're inside of it, provide the sanctity of it so that nobody inside gets hurt either.
So to be clear, for those who haven't seen it, we're talking about essentially the concept of the bubble city, as we've heard repeatedly from the Chinese Basketball Association. They would put everyone inside of that area and keep them there. The players would be away from their families, in theory, for as long as 4 or 5 months, if it really did go the entire distance. And they'd play the games with no fans in the stands. This is what we're looking at. They have enough stadiums in that area because of spring training that they could essentially carry out everything, certainly as far from normal as one could imagine, but you could get in the majority of the games.
Yeah, and listen, that's the hope and that's the plan at this point. But we are in like the nascent stages right now, Greeny. This is just the beginning. And for the last few weeks, Major League Baseball and top officials there have been talking with officials at the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention and the National Institute of Health. This is not some sort of like willy-nilly plan that they're throwing out there. This is something that the scientists are saying, yes, In theory, something like this could work. And because they have the backing of some in the medical community at this point, it's really emboldened baseball to start taking steps forward and looking at those logistics and trying to sell to the players, who also have talked with health officials, the idea that this is something that would work. But you're right. This could blow up really quickly if the players decide they do not want to isolate from their families for months potentially at a time. And so we're at a really interesting point this week as the players in MLB talk about this plan and about its viability.
Listen, far be it from me to be telling any players what they should or shouldn't do with regard to their own health and safety. That obviously is for them. But if this were to come down to a scenario, and we're probably a long way from that right now, but Jeff, if this came down to a scenario where the players were told, either we try this or there will be no baseball in 2020, which means none of the players get paid in 2020. What is your sense of how that would go?
Let's put it this way, Greeny. I had this exact conversation. There are some players around the league who I, you know, sort of use as litmus tests for theories. And something like this had been percolating around. And so I asked a player a couple days ago, hey, if you have to go into a bubble city and you are separated from your family for an indeterminate amount of time, and this is a player who has a wife and kids, is that something that's going to work for you? And his initial response was, no effing way. Yesterday afternoon, I get a text from the same player. It says, talked with my wife. And she said, if the only way that I get paid this year is by having to go into the bubble, here I come, bubble. And I think, you know, there are players out there who are not going to feel that way. And Buster Olney on Twitter this morning made a great point about that. How do you deal with the players who will simply refuse to go into the city? Well, that's something that we may be answering in the coming weeks. One of 1,000 questions and roadblocks in the way of this plan getting off the ground, and yet the right people right now to make it happen are behind it. And that's the most important part in these early stages.
Right. I'm thinking about players who may have compromised immune systems for any number of reasons that might exist, and all these other things. So clearly, sure. There are.
Greeny, let me. Can I just give you? Can I give you a very quick example here of something that Mike Trout's wife is pregnant and due in August. What do you do if you're him?
Right.
Do you leave the biosphere and then when you come back, you've got to quarantine again for 2 weeks? Which do they let you back? I mean, there are so many questions about this plan where it feels like it can fall apart. And yet it's their option right now, and it's what they have to make work. So we're going to see just how creative MLB and the players can be in what is essentially one giant riddle to solve, with thing after thing after thing that's going to crop up. And they have to understand there are going to be mistakes made here if this thing works. What you hope is that the mistakes don't lead ultimately to COVID-19 spreading among a population that doesn't just include players, remember, but includes managers, Joe Maddon in his 70s, that includes older coaches, umpires. All of these people are going to be in the bubble, and they need to be protected as well.
Yeah, a couple of quick other things, and we'll have you with us a little later this morning and go through them, because there are any number of places where this thing could fall apart. We all understand that. But just as far as infrastructure, I'm sure a lot of people are wondering. I mean, in Phoenix, in that area, in June and July, if anyone you know is watching who lives there or has ever been there, I mean, we're talking about some pretty significant heat.
Not great.
How many of the potential stadiums have indoor capability? I know of at least one. Is that it? Is it just the one?
Yeah, but those games might be played in open air just because of the idea of trapping things in a dome. Now, granted, the whole premise of this is that the people who are going to be involved in these games are going to have been in the biosphere, so they're not going to be carrying the coronavirus. But yeah, it's Chase Field downtown where the Diamondbacks play. And you can get into maybe 3 games a day there, but there are 10 spring training complexes around the area. There's also Phoenix Municipal Stadium, which used to be the spring home of the A's, and now Arizona State plays there. There are options, but the heat is a realistic thing, Greeny, and it's part of the reason, in addition to trying to make sure that if a small potential outbreak does happen, you have enough players, that both sides agree there are going to be need to be significantly expanded rosters to make this happen. You know, there may be 40 or 50 players on a roster available at one time for teams to go out and get, not just because you could lose some players if an outbreak does happen, but because guys are just going to be tired from playing in the 100-degree heat. I will say this, though. Every fall, half the teams in baseball send out an Arizona League team full of 18 and 19-year-olds to play in the Phoenix Heat. Those games are at night, and I think that's something that could happen. You can have games at night for the West Coast teams, and you could have games earlier in the day, maybe, you know, afternoon games for the East Coast teams.
All right, listen, I'm sure that many people who've not read it yet have a lot of questions. Many of them are answered in the piece. I recommend you go to ESPN.com or Jeff's Twitter page and you read all of it, because there's a lot of answers, as many as there exist right now. Clearly, this is a situation that is fluid, to say the least. Jeff, great work. I need to go here, but we'll bring you back a little bit later in this hour and we'll talk further as we go. It's Jeff Passan, our baseball insider, with an extraordinary story. I want to get some players in here. And again, I've got two football players with me right now. We'll have Alex Rodriguez a little later this morning, but you see Ryan Clark and Dominique Foxworth. And I just want to ask both of you guys, Nick, I'll start with you. If we were to see a situation right now, again, because this is baseball, but let's just put ourselves in a world where football faces this as well, where your option is miss a season and not get paid for a year, or go into a bubble away from your wife and your children and everything else for 4 months, what do you think you would do, and what do you think most football players would do?
Football players, I think, are a lot more comfortable with a level of risk than most sports and most people, frankly. So I think that most players would be willing to go do that. I absolutely would have gone and done it, especially if I was in my second contract. That's money that you'll never get back. That frankly is meant to set up your life and set up your kids' kids. So it's a risk that you would take for just a few months. I think the people around the organization who aren't necessarily players or coaches who aren't making the big money, those people might have a harder decision to make, because this is not what they signed up for by any stretch. And I do think it's important to point out that this baseball experiment, if it's something that they do try, everyone needs it to succeed, because if they go into that bubble and it fails, there goes the football season. No other league is going to try this if baseball tries it and it fails.
How about you, RC? And obviously yours is a situation. It's well documented, some of the issues that you have from a health standpoint after what happened in Denver. So you might have a little different perspective on this, but I'm just curious, as you heard the conversation with Jeff, what are your thoughts on the whole thing?
Well, listen, I think players play. It's what we do. It's what we were born to do. It's what we've worked for our whole lives. And I remember I actually talked to Coach Tomlin about this at the combine. I remember sitting in a meeting with my doctors that I'd assembled to try to convince Coach Tomlin, the training staff, that I could play in Denver for the playoffs, because that game was that important to me. And that was one game. So when you talk about guys having an entire season of money that may go away, I believe that players will do it. And Greeny, make no mistake about it, when you play football or when you're a baseball player or any professional athlete, and you talk about living in a bubble, our lives are bubbles. I was sitting in my kitchen the other day, and my wife was having a conversation with my son about the things that wives have to sacrifice and the things that wives have to do in order for their husbands or for their significant others to excel at the sport that they choose, or really the sport that's chosen them. And so I believe if it works for baseball, I believe if baseball goes forward with it, that these guys want to play, they will try to play. But I agree with Dominique. If this doesn't work, if there is an outbreak, if there is another scare, there will be no season to follow this. So if they go out and they try to set the mark or set the barrier of what can be done, and it doesn't work, it fails for us all.
Look, obviously this is in a nascent stage, but it is a glimmer of hope for those of us who are sports fans. If it can be done, if it can be done safely for everyone, if it doesn't compromise anyone else whatsoever, we're going to keep talking about it. And coming up in our next hour, we will talk about this with one of the most famous baseball players ever. Alex Rodriguez will join me 9:30 Eastern time this morning with his perspective. Is it possible that we are closer to seeing baseball return than we may have thought? We'll ask A-Rod and continue to talk about it as we go. Meanwhile, we're just getting started here on Get Up. Also to come, Notre Dame football wants to wake up the echoes this season, but there's one important thing they want before that can happen. And you'll hear what that is coming up next. And then after that, you think it's a lock that Tua's going to the Dolphins? Mel says not so fast. Neek says this is a huge mistake. You'll hear it all as we continue. It's Get Up on ESPN.
Hello, this is your apartment. I need some favors from you. Your cat keeps rubbing against the kitchen island, and I can't return the favor. Can you give her extra pets for me? After that, could you bundle your renters and car insurance with Geico? We could save money, and it's easy to do online. And one last thing. Could you leave the TV on during the day? I need to catch up on my soaps.
Geico. For bundling made easy, go to geico.com today.
Foot odor throwing you off your game? Stick to a winning game plan with Odor Eaters, featuring three advanced odor and wetness fighters. The lineup provides long-lasting odor control plus more to keep your feet on their game.
Odor Eaters powder provides outstanding moisture control. Clear drying spray is the MVP in preventing athlete's foot, while insoles work continuously to manage wetness while adding a layer of comfort. Pick up today at Walmart, Target, CVS, Dollar General, or other fine retailers.
Odor Eaters. Destroy foot odor with the best in odor defense.
Get Up is brought to you by Who Wants to Be a Millionaire? Premieres tomorrow night at 10, 9 Central on ABC, rated TV-14. Okay, no determination has been made as of yet on the status of the 2020 college football season in the fall, but yesterday, Notre Dame's athletic director, Jack Swarbrick, said he couldn't see playing a whole season without fans in the stands.
Potentially, I could see it starting that way. You know, maybe you say, we're going to play a game or two that way. I don't think you can conduct a season that way. I think spectators are too central to the experience. I don't think it would be fair to our students. You know, and I don't like the idea of our game day stadia just being television studios. They need to be alive with people in attendance.
That's fascinating for him to say that. Struck me as curious. And so Nick and RC are here. And Laura Rutledge joins us as well. And Laura, no one is around college football, generally speaking, more than you are. Do you know if Jack Swarbrick's view on this is one that is shared by a lot of other people around the sport?
Yeah, Greeny, in talking to college coaches and a couple of conference commissioners, the overwhelming majority say that they cannot imagine a college football season without fans. And this is because fans in college football are the fabric of our sport. In 2018, which is the most recent data available of a season, there were 37 million people that attended college football games. And obviously, we're in unprecedented times, so everyone's trying to figure out some way that maybe we could have college football, and that's the overwhelming goal. But I think they do have to protect not only the experience of the fans, of course, that's important, but the experience and the careers of the student athletes that come to college for these great environments. A couple of things that were brought up to me that I think are really important points here. One of the things is, let's say that there are no fans allowed. One college coach said to me, Greeny, that that would also mean that players' families could not come and watch them at their game. They said, watch the transfer portal at that point. It would become complete chaos because a lot of players wouldn't want to be away from their families that long, especially at a younger age for these young men. They might just transfer back home to a school closer to home. And then furthermore, when you think about what this could look like for a lot of these schools, football is the main revenue generator for all of these universities. That's so important in looking at this from all different angles.
I get it. Here's the point I would follow up. I did not hear the entirety of the interview with Jack. But if the option is to play with fans or without fans, I get it. But if the option is to play without fans or not have the games at all, wouldn't they choose to play the games without the fans?
Yes, I would think so. I mean, here's the thing. They may have to, Greeny. Like, they may not be in a situation to say, well, look, we really wanted to have fans. It's almost like you cannot have your cake and eat it too, obviously, here. And so, to your point, I do think they would try and find a way to at least have games. And that sets up so many different things. You're going to see the Alabamas of the world, the Clemsons of the world, you know, LSU, all of these big time programs that will lead the way in this, whether people like it or not. They'll say, look, let's have a season. And I think one of the main reasons why, you've already heard from Dabo Swinney on this, it plays so much into the future of these programs from the standpoint of the draft as well. All this is connected. If you don't have a college football season, you wonder what the draft looks like in years to come. And so I think from that standpoint, too, They've got to continue to give these guys opportunities to play at the next level. I think that is a main point, too, in all of this, of why they would try and at least have a season in some way, shape, or form, even though it won't look like what people would want it to.
Yeah, RC, let me go to you here again. I mean, I fully understand the significance of the fans and the totality of the experience, but these are unique circumstances. So here we are talking about the possibility of people moving into a bubble. If these games have to be played without 80,000 people in the building, it seems more likely that they could do it that way, no?
Well, I mean, I think you can do it that way, and you would have to do it that way. Dabo Sweeney makes a great point about giving these guys opportunities to play in some of their last years to impress scouts and give scouts some film to look at. And I'm kind of on both sides of this. I went to LSU, where I know there are kids that go to that school just to go to football games. And it's not that it's not a great institution of higher learning, but Saturday nights in Death Valley are the reasons that many people decide to wear purple and gold. And I talked to my son about it all the time, and he told me, Pop, I don't care if we have to play the game in the bubble. You guys can watch it on TV. I want to play. And I think many players feel that way.
Nick, what do you think?
Yeah, I think Ryan's right, and I don't understand, or maybe they don't understand the definition of the word central. Like, central to me means that it is essential to the game. All you need is two teams, a ball, some referees, and some coaches, and 100 yards. So you don't need fans. They're quite literally on the periphery of the whole experience. That seems like nonsense to me. So I understand that you may not want to put the players in that danger, but saying that you can't imagine having a season without a fan, like, most football games in this country are played without fans.
Well, I have to leave it there because I'm up against the clock here. Laura, let's check back on this again tomorrow because there's so much about it that doesn't make a lot of sense to me. We'll keep talking about it as we continue. All right, also coming up this morning, the Dolphins should not consider taking anyone other than Tua. The Skins will be making a colossal error if they pass on Chase Young. Bold statements next. Get up, ESPN.
Though we're apart these days, we're sharing more. So, at GEICO, we'd like to say thanks. Thanks for sharing your savage dance moves. Thanks for sharing your DIY haircut fails. Thanks for sharing your inner lip sync star. Now, it's our turn to share with the GEICO Give Back, a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. Because we're committed for the long haul, the 15% credit lasts your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for more info and eligibility.
Back on a very busy morning on Get Up, the NBA was the first league to suspend play. And at the time, Commissioner Adam Silver said they'd reevaluate in 30 days. So what has he learned since then? Here's what he had to say in an interview on the NBA's Twitter account last night.
The fact is now, sitting here today, I know less in a way than I did then.
Wow.
I think in some ways, just as I listen to the public health experts and the people that are advising us, the virus is potentially moving faster than maybe we had thought at that point, and that it therefore may peak earlier. What that means in terms of our ability to come back at some point in late spring or summer is still unknown to me. And essentially what I've told my folks over the last week is that we should just accept that at least for the month of April, we won't be in a position to make any decisions. I don't think that necessarily means on May 1st we will be, but at least I know, I think just to settle everyone down a little bit, it doesn't mean that internally, both the league and in discussions with our players and the teams, we aren't looking at many different scenarios for restarting the season. But I think it honestly is just too early, given what's happening right now.
It was part of a long-ranging interview, and there's Woj, our NBA insider, Adrian Wojnarowski. So, Woj, what is the latest that you are hearing from inside the league as far as all of the different planning that they're doing?
Well, Greeny, there certainly are any number of contingencies that they're trying to put in place based on how many days they would actually have to work with for a season, regular season, playoffs. You know, but a great deal of it, Greeny, gets back to testing and having rapid response testing, you know, in a bubble. And we had Jeff Passan on earlier, you know, talking about that baseball plan of trying to return in Arizona. And, you know, the NBA is looking at a similar idea. They've talked about a few different sites, but the conversation largely keeps coming back to Las Vegas. where the NBA does spend a lot of time. They have their summer league there. And what the NBA would have to have in my conversations with people is essentially the ability that if a player tested positive in that quarantine bubble, that they wouldn't then have to completely shut down a playoff series or isolate or quarantine a team for 2 weeks because one of their teammates or the head coach or somebody in that immediate party tested positive. Could they just take that player out, treat him, and then be able to test the others and keep going? And without that environment, without that possibility, I think a return is really difficult because the last thing they want to do is start up the season, start up playoff series. All of a sudden, the team's up 2-1, somebody tests positive, and you've got to shut the thing down. They can't have that scenario because even in a bubble and a quarantine, it is still possible someone is going to test positive.
Right, and that's the part I think where Silver is saying we don't know when that will be available, so we really can't have any further idea. I know, right. I'm asking you a question that no one may know the answer to, but do they have a date by which they feel they need to be done, which is to say, are they willing to do something that could compromise the beginning of next season or at least the scheduling of next season if that's what it comes to?
Greeny, I've been told Labor Day weekend that they would like to have a champion crowned by Labor Day weekend, which is obviously the first weekend in September. That takes you right to the edge of what would be the start of football season. Now, does that mean if they create a scenario where they think they could have a game 6 or game 7 of an NBA final on September 7th or 8th or 9th, that they wouldn't do it? No. But ideally, the date they've kind of circled is Labor Day weekend, to have this finished. And of course, that's still almost likely, or I think almost certain, if you push it that far, that you are delaying the start of next season. There's no question that this impacts not only this season, but next season in the NBA. And that's part of what they're taking into consideration when they decide on dates now. What does it mean for next year? And so those are all part of the conversations that are still ongoing now.
Labor Day weekend is roughly 4 months from now. So that's the time frame we're working in. All right, Woj, we'll come back to you a little later in the show. I have more questions. Thank you so very much. And meanwhile, tomorrow on ESPN and on the ESPN app, we'll continue our weekly look back at some of the most significant games in NBA Finals history. Fans leaving a step-back three, an overtime win, highlight an amazing Game 6, Heat Spurs, 7 Eastern, and then it's a Game 7 thriller. All that and more, the best of the NBA tomorrow night on ESPN. Back to football. The NFL confirmed that the 2020 draft will be entirely virtual with all team personnel working from their homes. All facilities initially closed on March 26th, and Roger Goodell has ordered them to remain shut indefinitely. Adam Schefter joins us live with the very latest. Schefty, how did the league land on this decision to just make everything virtual for the draft?
Well, Greeny, there are federal guidelines, there are state mandates, there are different rules wherever you go in this country right now. And so the NFL felt like it had no choice at this point in time to make it a virtual draft. And really, this is what teams were expecting and preparing for all along. But even now, they're not convinced that this will be the final decision where everybody's got to be at home by themselves drafting alone, because the draft is a complicated process. A lot is based on communication, where there are head coaches talking to GMs, GMs talking to personnel directors talking to college scouting directors. And so there's so much communication going on that if a team is trying to make a trade, teams think it's going to be hard for each person to be by themselves. And they also think that there's a built-in advantage for a team like the Dallas Cowboys that's got its owner and GM there with his son working side by side, whereas other teams can't have that advantage. So there's never going to be a perfect system, but right now, the way it's set up is the league believes it's best for each person to be at home drafting by his or herself.
Is there any way, this is almost an impossible question, but to suggest that it would lean one way or the other relative to the players who are actually drafted? Is there any way to know what impact it will have? The football fan is sitting here and thinking, I really don't care where they're all sitting, but how will this impact who gets drafted? Is there any reason to think it'll have an impact on that?
Well, I think what it may impact, Greeny, is the amount of trading you see, because if you're leaving the same amount of time on the clock, there is less time for teams to communicate with each other and turn in the picks, and therefore you may see less trading than in other years. Usually we see teams jumping up and all around the draft board, and maybe we'll see it again, But I know there are people that are skeptical that that can happen under these circumstances because of the difficulties we're presented with here. Plus, I know there are teams that are worried about technological challenges. And yesterday there was a GM that said to me, hey, there may be an IT guy who's worried about coming to my house to get it outfitted because IT guys now become the most valuable guys in the organization for the next 2 weeks. And the IT guys may be worried about going into a head coach's home or a GM's home. So there's concerns there. And there's also the concern I had last week. One GM said to me that his internet went out at home. Can you imagine if a team was on the clock and the internet went out and he couldn't turn in his pick? There are a lot of scenarios to think about that we're just beginning to see here, but we know it's going to be unlike any other draft that we've ever seen.
It is fascinating. We have a GM coming up in a few minutes. Tom Telesco from the Chargers will ask him his thoughts, and Shefty will get you back off the top of the hour. Thank you. I want to bring Neek and RC back in here because our original plan for today was we were going to have Mel Kiper on, and he was going to talk about some of the things that he sees at the top of the draft. And with all these things that have happened, we weren't able to get Mel in here. But RC and Neek, I wanted to bounce off you one of the primary points he was going to make. I'm quoting Mel Kiper now. That based upon these circumstances and teams' inability to get a hands-on and up-close look at Tua Tagovailoa, that he, Mel, is not convinced that Miami is going to take Tua at five and that it is possible that Justin Herbert becomes the pick at five, that Herbert may wind up ahead of Tua based upon the circumstances. Neek, your thoughts?
The more I think about this, I think it's a mistake on passing for Tua, and it's absolutely a mistake if you draft Herbert at that spot. I think Herbert has some skills and could grow into a quarterback, but he's not a number five overall. And everyone talking about how risky it is to take Tua, like you're committed to maybe $10 to $12 million in guarantees. That's nothing compared to what some teams have committed to quarterbacks, frankly, who are not nearly as talented as Tua is, including like Ryan Tannehill, a guy like that who has $91 million committed to him. So I don't think it's as huge a risk. I understand he might get hurt, but then you've set your franchise back maybe a year, maybe two or three. It's not the same as committing really big money to someone like Nick Foles, who has $50 million guaranteed. Like, I don't think it's a huge commitment to go for Burrow, and I think going for Herbert at five over Burrow would be a huge mistake.
Okay, and then the other piece that Mel was going to bring up here, and RC, I'll bounce this one off of you, is that based upon their inability to get a closer look at Tua and other teams now less likely to trade up, that he feels like Chase Young to Washington at number two becomes essentially a lock. In your mind, is that the best outcome for Washington either way?
It absolutely is, because it's the player we know the most about. This guy has been dominant since entering Ohio State as a five-star, and he just got better and better. And now look at the two guys who left before him, the two Bosa brothers. From most of what everybody says and what we've seen on film, Chase Young is more athletically, naturally talented than both of those guys. Listen, in a situation like this, you go for what you know. If I'm going to leave my house right now and get something to eat, I'm going to go to a place that I know is going to cook that food right, because I've seen it, I've tasted it, and I know that. And that's what we've seen with Chase Young. Right now, Tua Tagovailoa, he's too much of an outlier. You know, with Chase Young, you have a player for over a decade that will dominate. You make that pick. You've already gone out and got Kyle Allen. Don't clutter your room or your quarterback room taking a quarterback that you may not know how available he'll be.
Yeah, it's really interesting. We have created a world where the quarterback, they are the most important player, but not the only one that matters. It does seem like it's going to go that way. All right, both these guys are with me here, and RC is going to, coming up, explain his tweets. If you want to know why Aaron Rodgers is an all-time great, Ryan Clark got a first-hand lesson at that in the biggest game in the world. He'll tell you what it was and explain that and several other tweets, which is everybody's favorite. And it's next on Get Up ESPN.
Geico gets you access to licensed agents 24/7, which means that Geico is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like your mom, when you fill out really, really important paperwork on the first day of a new job.
Name, check. Birthday, social security, is that a thing? Hey, mom, what is my social security number? Mom? Okay, let's guess. 0017. Oh, Gemini. Hashtag done.
Geico, always there for you with savings and 24/7 access to licensed agents.
There may be no games,
no practices,
no high fives,
but we're all still part of a team,
and we all have a role to play.
Right now, that means keeping our distance,
but still checking on each other,
helping the most vulnerable,
and supporting our heroes
that are keeping us safe.
Sports may be paused,
but the best parts are needed now more than ever.
So let's all do our part to help our team
right now.
Busy morning with us, and coming up in 45 minutes, 9:30 Eastern Time, we will have Alex Rodriguez, A-Rod, on baseball's plans to return, possibly as soon as the middle of May. We'll talk about that and more with Alex Rodriguez in 45 minutes here on ESPN. Meanwhile, news from football as well. Let's talk about the Chargers, who will have a different look next season after 5 years with the team. Melvin Gordon signed a two-year deal with the Broncos. He's the only player with 8 rushing touchdowns in each of the last 4 seasons. That's one change. Here's the big one. Phillip Rivers, the longtime face of the franchise, signed a 1-year, $25 million deal with the Colts. He spent 16 years with the Chargers, leaves as the franchise leader in most passing categories. And right now, Tyrod Taylor is the frontrunner to take over at quarterback. He signed a 2-year contract with the team last year. He's 23-21-1 in his career. With Rivers gone, Taylor and Easton Stick are currently the only quarterbacks on the roster. Of the two, Taylor is the only one to have any experience. Stick was a 5th-round pick out of North Dakota State last year. He did beat out Cardell Jones for the 3rd and final quarterback spot a year ago. And we really wanted to have a general manager on this morning to talk about his team and, of course, the draft rules here. And here is Chargers general manager Tom Telesco, good enough to get up very early for us on the West Coast. And, Tom, I really appreciate it. And we'll get to your team in a second, but we're talking about the draft being run virtually, the NFL announcing that yesterday, and it's definitive. So you'll be running this draft from home. So to you, as a general manager, how will that make things different for you?
Well, first of all, it's not a virtual draft to us. I mean, it's real. But, yeah, it's going to be unique. It's going to be a challenge. But the more we put into this, the more we plan for it. I think we have a good plan for this. It's gotten a little bit exciting as far as how this is going to all plan out. I've been doing this for a long time, been in a lot of draft rooms before, never anything like this before. But we have a good plan to keep everybody connected, at least internally, probably through a lot of video conferencing. So between, if anyone's been in a draft room or seen a draft room, I mean, you have ownership in there. You have your front office, you have your head coach, Anthony Lynn. Our assistant coaches aren't in the draft room, but they're a big part of the draft. And then our college scouts, our pro scouts, our doctors. So it's a lot of people internally to keep in contact with. We'll have a plan for that. How we connect with the other teams and talk with them, that's going to be a little bit of a challenge that we'll work through. Honestly, right now, it's probably going to be a little bit of a family affair for us. I may have my kids on the phone taking phone calls. I'm probably in negotiations with my wife on what her role is going to be on draft weekend. But it's all hands on deck right now.
It's fascinating. We just had Adam Schefter on. We were talking about the ways in which it might be evident to the fan that this was different. Because at the end of the day, I think most fans care about what players wind up where and less about the mechanics of how you're going about doing it. In what ways do you think it might actually influence the way the draft plays out?
It's an unknown, Greeny. I just don't know. I mean, this is something we've never had to do before. We haven't had a lot of lead-up time to prepare for this. You know, we've been looking at this for a couple of weeks. We knew this was a possibility, so we were in planning mode. But I just don't know. I really don't know. It's completely new for all of us. But I think we put a pretty good plan together. We feel good about it. We'll probably test it next week, go through some different scenarios. But our planning process with how we've been meeting with the scouts and the coaches have pretty much been unaffected in the fact, other than the fact that we can't meet face to face. But no, it's a little bit of an unknown right now.
Quickly, Adam Schefter mentioned that the possibility that we'll see fewer trades. You just mentioned that your communications with other teams is one of the pieces of this you can't really work on as much ahead of time. Do you believe we might see fewer deals made as a result of that?
I mean, I guess it's a possibility, but it's just hard to know right now as far as how that's going to play out. In the end, I think everybody has their job to do, and I think it's probably going to probably function the way you normally see it on draft weekend. I mean, for us, it's going to be a lot different, but, you know, we'll still be able to contact other GMs, other front offices. We'll have phone numbers for everybody. Like I said, I may have my son Nicholas on one of the phones, my son Thomas on one of the other phones, but it will all get done in the end.
Let's see which one of them winds up making the big trade that you guys are looking to make. Let's talk about the quarterback situation. We just ran through it. There's been a lot of attention paid to that. How do you feel about your quarterback situation right now? What are you looking to do?
Well, look, we have confidence in Tyrod Taylor. And just as important, our teammates and his teammates have confidence in Tyrod. So that's where we are right now, and we're very happy with that. And other than that, I mean, we're really pretty much all draft focus right now. I mean, free agency goes on forever, obviously. Free agency never ends, but the main part of free agency is kind of passed, and now we're strictly in draft mode. But No, we're excited about Tyrod. We think he can do a lot of things for us. Anthony Lynn has a lot of confidence in him, and we'll be ready to go.
Understood. There is one free agent, though, that people continuously link with your team, and Tyrod Taylor himself posted a photo recently of himself working out with Cam Newton. They've known each other a long time. What conversations have you had about Cam?
Well, like Cam and like almost every player that comes available, we always talk about things internally. But like I said before, we're very confident in Tyrod Taylor to run our offense the way we want it to run. And, you know, we'll always monitor what's available out in free agency and on the street. But, you know, right now it's really 100% draft focus. And obviously with the logistics going on with this draft this year from home, it's taking us a little extra time and work.
Fair enough. All right, Tom, listen, I appreciate the time very much. Thank you. Good luck to you and your kids as you maneuver through this draft. And we'll check in with you again. We appreciate it. Right now, Ryan Clark with his tweets. It's time for Ryan Clark to explain his tweets.
Get in the gym, bro.
Well, I just got buffalo chicken dip.
Baker.
Bruh.
Lord. As everyone laughs at the way I read your tweets. I can't even do it with a straight face. Alright, we love to do these. Ryan Clark is the best Twitter follow, and we will go through some of these. The first one's actually easy for me to read, RC. That was an easy call. Been money since your rookie year. Who'd you tweet that at and why?
Richard Sherman. Listen, I met Richard Sherman on the lawn at the Pro Bowl his rookie season, and Brandon Browner, Earl Thomas, and Cam Chancellor were all in the Pro Bowl, and he was telling me that the youngest member of LOB would be back the next year. And you know, when you meet Rich, he's slightly abrasive. He's kind of in your face. So at first, I was kind of taken back. But then I started to watch dude, and he balled, and it was eight picks, and it was Super Bowls, and it was Pro Bowls, and it was all pros. And then he gets injured, and he goes to San Francisco and becomes a very vital part as an all-pro and a Pro Bowler, or the number one defense in the NFL. And when you can do that over the span of time that Richard Sherman has done it, you deserve to be on the all-decade team. And for a dude who's not scared to tell you how good he is, now the world gets to tell him. And I thought it was super dope, and I felt like he needed to be acknowledged.
All right, the next tweet here is a little more complicated. One fourth, one half. I was the backside half safety. I locked Ike Taylor on the tight end backside of 3x1 because film showed that Greg Jennings was the first read at number 3 versus split safeties. It was supposed to be my MVP moment, but Aaron Rodgers had other plans. RC, explain that tweet.
Greeny, you know me and you have talked about this. First off, it's quarter halves, not one-fourth, okay. One half. And I was the backside safety. And I already told you, Greeny, for 2 weeks, I schemed up this interception. I schemed it up. And I saw Greg Jennings at number 3. Ike had a tight end. I say, this is the moment. I had practiced in the mirror for 2 weeks. I'm going to Disney World. And then I bring it low. I'm going to Disney World. Then I keep it real cool. Y'all know I'm going to Disney World. So I was already ready. As I'm running over, I'm thinking about how I'm going to say it. I see Aaron Rodgers. He's getting ready to throw it. I go to pick it. I missed it. I couldn't jump over a wet hamburger. And then Aaron Rodgers is walking off the field the next drive, and he's like, hey, 2-5. What I've learned is, though, I played on very good teams because I've been shown on TV a lot lately, and that is the good part. Now, all the people that tweet me that I couldn't play, just watch the freaking games. We was always in the Super Bowl.
You were that close. I'm sorry I read it wrong. Here's a great one, and here's the tweet. Poor people love pizza. White people love pizza. Black people love pizza. Do black people love pizza? Michael Scott, the GOAT, hashtag The Office. You're watching it. Explain the tweet.
Hey, so everybody that's trying to get me to watch The Office, I finally started watching. And Michael Scott, who is super awkward, is also extremely funny. And yes, black people do love pizza. And on the show, they cut right to black people loving pizza. And Dan Orlowski, you're talking about me always talking about food. Last week, I bought on the cereal, but people want to know what type of snacks you're eating, RC. We got donut sticks. We got honey buns. We got oatmeal pies. We got brownie brittle if you want to be a little healthy. Even some Pop-Tart joints. And I always finish with the brownies. But my son, because he was bored. I heard you talking about certain kids getting bored at home. My son got bored. He got the ingredients for ooey gooey cake, and he made Pops one. It's a ooey gooey butter cake. He only made it 2 days ago. I'm supposed to be eating one snack a day. I failed you, snacks over everything, but we gonna rock out today because we ain't tripping. Like Michael Scott said, I feel like I'm a great boss and a great philanderer. It was a philanthropist, but he made it work.
You're the best. Ryan Clark explaining his tweets. Big news potentially from baseball. A glimmer of hope for the sports fan is next. Get up on ESPN.